All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Chaf Hei Amud Aleph. Nishpach Adam al Ritzpah Vasufo Pasul. If after the Shechita, Kabbalat Adam was not done, and the blood flowed onto the floor of the Mikdash, it is Pasul. This Mishnah is contrasted with the Mishnah that we'll see later on, where if you already did the Kabbalat Adam into a Kli, and then the Kli spills, then you can gather up the blood and continue on with the Korban. So here the failure is that there's no Kabbalat Adam that is done. It goes directly onto the floor, and that's the problem. Had there been Kabbalat Adam and then it spilled, then you could gather that blood that spilled and then continue on with the process. So Tana Banan. So the Pasuk tells us, Lakach HaKohen HaMashiach Midam HaPar Ve'hevi'o Oto El Ol Moed. The Pasuk we're focusing on is with regards to the Korban Chatat of the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Mashiach, which we spent a lot of time on in Masechet Oriot. Kach HaKohen HaMashiach Midam HaPar. So now Midam has a preposition of the Mem before it, which would mean from amongst the Dam HaPar. Midam HaNefesh B'Milo Dam HaOr. So one of the things we learn is, you only take the Dam HaNefesh and not Dam HaOr. That is, when you shech the animal, there is blood that exists on the surface. Any person, when you get a cut, you bleed, because there are veins or capillaries that are on the surface of your skin. And if you cut yourself, you injure yourself, the blood that comes out from there is dam ha'or, the dam of the skin, the dam of the basar. But that is not dam ha'nefesh. That's not a life-threatening thing when a person gets a cut, usually, in that it's a small amount of blood that exists on the surface of the skin. So again, when you shech the animal, when you first cut the animal, the dam at the surface, that's dam ha'or. That we're not interested in. Blood that we do want is midam ha'nefesh. The dam ha'nefesh, which is the blood in which the life force is found. And that is after you get that blood that drips out from the neck, after that you start to get hit the arteries, and then you get the blood that's pulsating out of the animal, which is really the life force of the animal, the dam ha'nefesh, and that's what we're after here. Velo midam ha'tamtzit. And also, we don't want from the dam ha'tamtzit, which we'll get to later on the Masechta, but suffice it to say that the dam ha'tamtzit is what comes after the dam ha'nefesh. So the dam ha'nefesh is the blood that is the life force of the animal, which is after the dam ha'or and before the dam ha'tamtzit. And then you'd have to define exactly where that change takes place. The dam ha'or is just really the blood that drips out at the beginning. It's not shooting out. It's not coming out of the arteries and the veins that are bringing the large flows of blood and that cause the cessation of the heart beating or are pumped through by the heart. That's the dam ha'nefesh. Once that again dies down afterwards, then it's called dam ha'tamtzit. When exactly that transition happens is a machloket in the Rishonim, which we'll discuss later in the Masechta. Midam ha'par, dam mehapar yikablenu. The second limud that we have here is that it has to be from the dam ha'par. Dam mehapar. You can see already what the Gemara did. It moved the mem from the midam hapar to dam mehapar yikablenu. You have to get the dam directly from the par. Deisakadatcha midam hapar kidichtiv. If you want to read it literally, which is that it's a preposition which says from amongst the blood, which means you don't need all the blood. You don't need a portion of the blood. Midam vafilu mixat dam. That's how you would have read it had you had no drushat chazal. You would have read the pasuk and said you have to take some of the blood. Damar Rav Yehuda Marav, Ashochet Tzarich Shikabel et Kol Damo Shopar. We have a statement from Rav which says that when you capture the blood from the par, you have to capture all the blood of the par. Shinamar, because the pasuk says, Tupsukim later, Venatan HaKohen Min Adam Al Kornot Mizbach Torat HaSamim Lifnei Hashem Asher Bo Moed Bet Kol Dam HaPar. Yishpoch, Yisod Mizbach HaOla Asher Petach Ol Moed. You have Kol Dam HaPar, Yishpoch. El, what are you going to say? Midam HaPar, Dam MeHaPar Yikablenu. That corners you into a position of saying that the Mem is not modifying the Dam, but the Mem is modifying the Par. And that means that instead of it being Midam HaPar, from amongst the Dam HaPar, rather it'll be Dam MeHaPar, the blood from the animal. He has to be mekabelet directly from the animal. V'kasavar gorin umosifim vidorshim. And we have a principle of drasha, which is that sometimes you can goreya, take away, umosif, add on, and then vidoresh. You can take away the mem from the midam, place it on the par, and then vidoresh. Instead of being midam apar, but rather being dam mehapar, that you have to mekabel the dam directly from the par, and that is the explanation of our Mishnah, which is that if the blood spills on the floor, it's not captured directly from the par, that it is pasul. Gufa, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav. So now the Gemara wants to investigate this idea that a shochet tzarich shekabel et kol damo shopar. This memra of Rav, that you have to capture all the dam apar, where do we know it from? Shenamar. And here the pasuk is quoted correctly, it was quoted incorrectly before, which is ve'et kol dam apar ishpoch el yisod mizbach olah asher petach o moed. Gemara says, v'abishtirayim ptif. That's not speaking about Kabbalat Adam. That's speaking about the residual dam you put onto the Yisod Mizbach HaOlah. That's whatever's left over. After you've done all the Avoda, then this is the dam that's left over. You pour it onto the Yisod Mizbach HaOlah. Im einu inyan the Shirayim, if it's not relevant to the Shirayim, da lete the kulei dam, there's no way you're going to have all the blood. By definition, Shirayim mean the residual of the blood after you've done the Avoda, so there's no way you can have all the blood here when you're doing the Shirayim. So then we will use it to define the Kabbalah, which is that you have to have all the blood in the Kabbalah, where by Shirayim it's impossible, but what you're basically saying is that the Shirayim have to have all the blood minus the Avoda. But the only way to do that is to have the Kabbalah capture all the blood. So I think you could spell it out that way, which is Kol Adam is required by the Kabbalah, so that the Shirayim is exactly that, all the blood minus the Avoda that was done all along. Amar Rav Yehuda Shmuel, at shochet tzarich sheyagbia sakin lamala. After the shechit is done, the shochet has to pull the knife up and move it upwards in an upwards motion away from the par. Shenemar v'lakach midam apar, below midam apar v'davar acher. You have to take from the dam apar and not from the dam apar and something else. Something else is the knife. So the blood that is on the knife, if it then falls into the utensil doing the Kabbalat Adam, that will taint it, because it's not dam coming from the pyre, it's dam coming from the sakin. The dam sakin, then what does he wipe the sakin on? What does he do with the blood that's on the sakin? Amar Abaye, the svat mizrak. He wipes it on the edge, the mouth of the mizrak, which is the utensil that is capturing the blood. Tirichtiv, as the Pasuk says in Ezra, that they have the kipurei zahav. As Rashi explains over here, the word kipurei, the kari the mizrakin. In Ezra, they call them the kipurei zahav. Al shem kinuach. Because of the kinuach, because of the wiping of the knives on the side of the mizrak, that's why they're called the kipurei zahav. And it gives a number of examples of where the word kapara means to wipe clean, which means to erase. Kapara, like we know it, in terms of kapara for a sin, that's the same meaning in that context, which is kapara means to clean off or to wipe away. And similarly over here, to wipe the knife away. Rashi also calls it kinuach, which also in the modern Hebrew kinuach, and even in the Gemara, kinuach means dessert, which is to clean the palate. So there are all these different usages of the word, which are more broad in context, but have really the same core meaning, which is to wipe off or to erase. And so it's over here, when it says the Kippurei Zahav, the reason the Mizrakim are called the Kippurei Zahav is not because of the kapara that they provide, rather because of the fact that they used to wipe their finger or wipe the knife on the side of the Mizrak. And that's why they're called the Kippurei Zahav. Now, why you have to do this, let's speak about it from the perspective of the knife. You need the knife clean. Because if the knife's not clean, then you're going to have a problem with the next Shechita, which is either you're going to have a problem with the blood from the knife from the first shechita mixing with the blood from the second one, which would be problematic, or it could coagulate on the knife and then provide a problem in terms of the shechita itself, or it could cause problems even in the shechita if it makes the knife slippery or makes it even sticky. So clearly you have to clear off the knife for what's going to happen afterwards. The second issue is how to clean off the knife. So now here you could have just taken a rag and cleaned off the knife, which is not the suggestion that is made here. Now, the reason has to be that you want to somehow either preserve the blood, or I'd call it be gonez the blood. We have other examples, as the Balei Tosafot speak about over here, whereby the para, when they do the avoda with the para aduma, that when the Kohen is finished with the dam, sprinkling it from his finger, he wipes it on the par itself. He wipes it off on the par, and then the blood is with the body of the par now, and then that will be nisraf. That's what's going to get burnt. But he does wipe it off on the par. From there you see that there is an idea of being either gonez the dam, or doing something that is respectable with the dam, not just wiping it off on a cloth. But wiping it up on the mizrak, in some ways you are treating it in a respectable manner, and maybe even being mikayim, the capturing of all the blood, which is that this blood cannot mix with the other blood, because it's not kasher to go on the mizbeach, because it went through the knife. But on the other hand, it is part of the dam, that is dam hapar. And so in that way, when you wipe it off on the side of the mizrak, in some ways you are capturing that blood without capturing that blood, or you're creating some sort of geniza of the blood. But again, the most important factor is the actual kinuach of the knife. And the second thing is it has to be something where it's convenient and easy to do. That the Baal HaTosafot what's speaking about here, that we don't have you do certain things where wiping off the knife on the par because you're found in two different locations. Is it a practical problem that between Azot and Dam, he can't reach the carcass of the Par Aduma, and so it doesn't make sense for him to wipe his finger off on it. But otherwise, when he is proximate to it, we would have him wipe it off on the animal itself, because that way you have the par kulo nisraf, all the par is being nisraf, as well as the fact that now the dam is being returned, in a sense, to its origins and not being discarded in a way that would be inappropriate. And he also notes that you have a problem with wiping the knife on the body of the par, which is nimim. The hairs of the cow will get stuck on the knife, and it'll be counterproductive, because then you'll end up with hairs on the knife instead of getting a clean knife. So this is a way to get a clean knife with something that's available, that's there, and will maybe accomplish geniza, capturing all the blood, and get the knife clean. I'm Rabbi, I'm a Rav Chista, I'm a Rav Yirmi Baba. So Rav Chista says, in the name of Rav Yirmi Baba, Shochet, person does the Shkita, Tzarich Sheitein Vridim L'toch HaKli. You have to move the, probably jugular veins, into the Kli. The arteries and the jugulars are going to spit a lot of blood out at that time, and you have to capture it. So you have to put them into the Kli, otherwise they're going to shoot away from the animal, and you're not going to capture them in the Kli. Now Rashi makes the point that you're not going to fit the par into the Kli, and you're not going to get the vridim into the Kli. It's just not a reasonable thing to ask for. So Rashi says, V'hai toch lav davka, the putting of the par, the vridim, into the Kli is not davka, dalo efshar, ela aviro shel toch ha-Kli. You have to get it above the airspace of the Kli. You have to get it in a direction where it's going to go into the Kli, and that you're not trying to catch it somewhere else. It's going to go flying out. You want to have it directed towards the Kli, especially above the Avir Kli, which we'll see will become very important in the next discussion of the Gemara, which is you want to get it above the Kli somehow, or in a direction where it's going to go directly into the Kli, even though it's spurting, even though it's shooting out of the par. So here we had a number of alochot. We had one alocha, which we'll have to come back to, which is what type of dam has to be captured from the par. We said it was dam ha-nefesh, not dam ha-or, not dam ha-tamtzit. Then we had the fact that you have to capture all the dam ha-par, and not that you can take some of it, you want to capture all of it. That capture has to be done through a kli, and it can't go onto the ground, because you have a requirement of dam mi-ha-par. The dam has come directly from the par, and not from some other median in between. So that disqualifies the floor, and also disqualifies the knife. If the dam's on the knife, it's also disqualified. And then, we also had it as a sidebar, the fact that you have to take care of the dam on the knife is that you wipe it on the side or the mouth of the mizrak. And now we had the last thing, which is you have to direct the blood into the kli. Alright, Itmar Nami. We have another member from Amoraim. Amar Avasi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Vridim, tzarich shiru avir ha-kli. The vridim have to be in the airspace of the kli. And again here, we're not speaking about internally the airspace of the kli. We're speaking about above the kli. So here you have a requirement in terms of Kabbalat Adam that the blood that is exiting the animal be directly above the kli or directly in the airspace of the kli. Not in the kli internally that you have to capture, but it has to be in the airspace above. So this is a memra that Rabbi Yassi brings in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yassi queried of Rabbi Yochanan. Hayami Kabel, he was doing Kabbalat Adam, Benifchatu shulei mizrak. Actually, the Adam lavir. The bottom of the mizrak fell out before the dam reached the avir, the airspace above. Mahu. What is the din with regards to this? First of all, Rashi makes the point. Shiagadam lavir dafnutav. Adshin lo nifchatu shulav. If the blood already reached within the air space internally of the kli before the bottom fell out, lo mi bayile. That's not a question. Once it's in the air space internally of the kli, you're done, you've got kabbalat adam. Therefore, if the base falls out, then you could just pick it up from the floor, like as if you had had kabbalat adam, and continue on with the process. The question here is, the blood has yet to reach within the internal airspace of the kli, but is above the kli. Do we consider it as if it's been captured already? And that has nafkamino. First of all, if you take some of the dam before it reaches into the kli, is that blood considered to be nitkabel already? Or do you have kabbalat adam? Now, when the bottom falls out and then it goes to the floor, do you already have kabbalat adam? The question involves two aspects to it. One is that nifchatu shulei mizrak, the base of the utensil in which you captured blood, fell out. Now, if it completely fell out and it's ois kli, then for sure there's nothing to speak about. It has to be that it's damaged in some way that it can't hold the blood, but it still has utility to it, so it still has a shame kli on it. Right, either it's leaking or something's going wrong. So the blood that goes in there will not stay in there. It's going to go exit from the utensil, but it's not completely not a kli anymore. Then the blood is flowing over it, but has yet to reach within the internal walls of the kli. We want to know, is that considered to be captured? Because, avir, shein sofo lanuach, kumunach dami, when you're in the airspace, even though in the end it won't necessarily come to rest there, is that already considered to be captured? Olam kumunach dami, or is that not considered to be captured? So once it enters over the airspace of the kli, not internally, but above the kli, and the bottom's out, so now you know once it enters the kli, it's going to exit the kli too. But it came into the air above the kli, is that considered to be already in the kli, or not in the kli? And again, the nafkaminot are, if then you pick it up from the floor, did you already have kabbalat adam and it's not pasul? As well as if you take the blood before it enters the kli and you take it from there, was kabbalat adam already accomplished? Amar lei tinitua. We have a Tanaic work that discusses this. Chavit shemunachat tachat hazinuk. If you have a chavit that is right below the flow, speaking about here is the paraduma, where you have to get mayim chayim el keli. You have to get live spring water into the kli in order to put the ashes, the paraduma, into it and mix it up. So now you're trying to capture mayim chayim el keli. So if you put the chavit, the utensil by which you're going to capture water below the zinuk, the flow of water, mayim shebetocha u'shebechutzala psulim. That water that's found in this kli or even outside of it is pasul. Now the reason it's pasul over here is because you have no intention with this chavit of capturing the water to use it for the paraduma. You have the kli there because it's just there. It captures the water, it's part of the flow, whatever you did to have it there. You're not intending to capture the water. What you're going to do is then take another kli, dip it into this chavit and take out the mayim chayim, or you're going to capture it from the airspace above the kli. Now the mayim chayim is flowing, and it can even be flowing in a pipe, as long as the pipe is mechuber lekarka, as long as it's attached to the ground, it doesn't lose its shame, mayim chayim. So you have a live water spring that is flowing over the surface, and then it flows out, maybe off the edge of a pipe. Again, a pipe that's carved out of the ground, out of the bedrock, however it is, it's still flowing, and then it shoots out from there, and then you have a chavit, you have some sort of utensil there that's capturing the water. But it says, with regards to the para, is, that is not kasher, and it's not considered to be mayim chayim el keli. If you, first of all, go into the barrel and scoop out water from it, not mayim chayim el keli. Number two is, if you capture the water before it enters into the chavit, also not considered to be mayim chayim el keli. Sirafi al zinuk amayim, if you move the kli right up against the zinuk amayim, right up against the flow, shibetokha psulim, that which is inside of it is pasul, that which is outside of it is kasher. So now, what you have here are two scenarios, and what the scenarios are teaching you is that the avira kli is considered to be as if it's in the kli. Which is here, if you have a flow of water, mayim chayim, and then it shoots off the edge of something, makes an arc, and then lands in a chavit, so So now what we're saying is the water that lands in that chavit, not considered to be mayim chayim el keli, because you didn't intend to capture the water. You were there for whatever other reason, nothing to do with parah adumah. The water now that is being captured inside of that chavit is not considered to be mayim chayim keli. If you dip something in and scoop it out, there you're not getting mayim chayim el keli. Number two is, if you capture the water in the air above that kli, also not considered to be mayim chayim el keli, because, and this is the answer that he's giving him, Rabbi Yochanan telling Rav Asi, avir kli kekli dummy. Here's the capture kli, there's a flow that's going over, and you stick something right above it to capture it before it goes into the chavit. So when you're trying to capture it before it goes into the chavit, avir kli kekli dummy, that means even chutzula, things that are outside the kli, but their arc and their trajectory is going into the kli, that's considered to be as if it's in the kli already, and it's pasul, again, for Mayim Chayim El Keli. The other hand, if you take the kli and push it right up against the zinuk amayim, right against the flow, so there's no air between them, then anything that's in that kli that you put there is no good. Again, you're using a kli that you have no intention of using for parah adumah. This is, if you intended to capture it for parah adumah, you'd be fine, because you're kind of capturing Mayim Chayim El Keli. But here, you're just capturing water independent of that. Whatever you're using the water for, now you want to use that water for Mayim Chayim El Keli. If what is found inside of this utensil, no good. What is outside the utensil, when it's right up against the zinuk amayim, right against the flow of the water, that's fine, because it never went into air space. You can't call that the air of the kli, because there's no air between the kli and the zinuk amayim. The ark can be used until it goes over the air space. The ark is still good. If you interrupt the ark and capture it for Mayim Chayim El Keli, for the parah adumah, it'll be fine, as long as it has not reached to be over the air space of the kli. So what Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out to Rav Asi is, you see from here, avir kli kekli dummy, that the airspace above the kli has the same status as the kli, because we are posel the water even before it gets to the chavit, as long as it's above the airspace of the chavit. Where it says, my, how could you compare these cases? Boy mine avir shein sofo lanuach. The question that Rabbi Ami posed was about water, blood, an object that is not going to come to rest inside of the kli, because there's something missing at the bottom. And vakaposhitle, and Rabbi Yochanan is answering him from a case of avir shesofolanuach, about something that will eventually reach the barrel. In the chavit that's sitting there that's capturing the water, there's no leak in that barrel. The water's going into that barrel. What Rabbi Yochanan quoted is, the airspace above that barrel is considered to be as if it's in the barrel. But that's because the barrel's closed, and it's going to sit there. It's not going to continue to flow on. There's no leak in this barrel. So how is he answering the question of Rabbi Ami? And Gemara's answer is, Tarte koboi minhei. It was a nested question. Rabbi Ami asked Rabbi Yochanan a nested question. Imtim salomar, avir shein sofo lanuach, lav kimunach dami. If you assume that water, blood, anything flowing into a kli, where the kli is not going to stop it, there's a hole at the bottom of the kli, there's something that doesn't allow it to be stopped there, that is not considered to be as if it was captured when you're in the airspace above it. Avir shein sofo lanuach, mai. Then in a case where it's sealed up, what is the din? And that's what Rabbi Yochanan was addressing, which was the second half of the question. It says, if you assume by sofo shalola nuach that it's problematic, what would you say about sofo lanuach? Rabbi Yochanan says, as far as sofo lanuach, it's a clear din. No questions asked, that it is considered avir kli, ke kli dummy. Now, as far as shalo sofo lanuach, there you have a question. But if you follow the Rambam Shita, whenever the Gemara says Imtim Salomar, it is bringing a conclusion, then here too would be Imtim Salomar. If you want to say, that's already a conclusion. Although over here, you could argue that it's not your standard form of Imtim Salomar. Because the way that Imtim Salomar usually works is you have nested question, and it gives an answer, and then it says Imtim Salomar. If you want to go with one of these two answers, then I have another question. Over here, it's really said in the form of the question itself, not in the form of an answer, so maybe it's not as binding. Over here, the Imtim Salomar. But from this, you would have thought that when it comes to Shesofo Lola Nuach, we're not sure, or we would say that it's Avir Kli Shalok Kli Dami. And then in the case where it is Sofo Lola Nuach, it's clear there that Avir Kli Kli Dami, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan proved, and that is Rabbi Yosef Madehochi. That's the version of the story brought by Rabbi Yosef. Rav Kana had the version of the story this way. Chavit by Mine, uposhet le Chavit. He avoided all the problem and said that Rav Asi's question was about a chavit, And Rabbi Yochanan's answer was about a chavit. Had nothing to do with our sugya here, about Mizrak and Dam, anything to do with that. It was a question about chavit, and the answer was about a chavit. Rabba Matne, Rabba's version of the story was, chavit boimine. He asked the question for chavit, upashat le Mizrak. And he answered him about the Mizrak. So he asked him the question of Paraduma, according to Rav Kahana, and he got an answer about the question of Mayim Chayim for the Paraduma. And according to Rabba's version of it, he asked him about the Chavit by Paraduma, and he said, look at the Mizrak, that from the Mizrak, we see that it is considered to be Avir Kli, Kikli Domi. And he says to him about the Mizrak, Yata Modebe Mizrak, Shiv Shalom below Zinuk. Don't you know when it comes to Mizrak that's doing the Kabbalat Adam, it's impossible to do it without it actually having some flow that goes in between it. So now you have a issue, which is you need to do Kabbalat Adam directly from the par. If you have to do it directly from the par, if it crosses through the avir, and you say the avir is not considered like the kli, then you're not getting it directly from the par. It's in air between the par and the kli. That means you have a failure of Kabbalat Adam directly from the par. The only way it will work is if you classify the airspace above the kli as being as if it's in the kli, then you would have a direct flow of blood from the par into the kli. And that's what we said above. That was the statement that Rav Asi Rabbi Yochanan, that vridim tzarich shiru avir kli, that the vridim need to see the airspace above the kli, otherwise you're not getting the blood directly from the par. It's flowing through the air and then coming to the par. That means there's a interruption, we'll call it, between where it's in the air, not in the par, not in the kli. The only way it's going to work is if you classify the airspace above the kli to be like the kli. That's how it'll functionally work, that you'll get directly from the par. Tanan Hatam, Ebe Mishnah, again in para. Natanya do, oraglo, o alei rakot, kadesh yavru amayim lechavit. So you have again a flow of water, strong flow of water that's up in the air. And what you do is you put your hand there to deflect the water down into the kli below you. So you put your hand on an angle, and the water is shooting at your hand, and it deflects it down into the chavit that's below. If you do that with your hand, you do that with your foot, or you do that with vegetables, leaves of vegetables, which are edible items, kadesh yavru amayim lechavit, psulim, they are problematic. Aleikanim, valei egozim, kshera. On the other hand, if you use the leaves of reeds, or the leaves of egozim, here it may not be the leaves, it may be the shells of the egozim. Not the shells when they harden, but the green shells when they're still in their raw-er state, kshera, then it's not a problem. Zeklau, this is the principle that's being invoked over here. Davar mikabel tuma psulim, davar shein mikabel tuma kshirim. If it's an item that is mikabel tuma, then it renders the mayim pasul. If it is done with something that is not mikabel tuma, then the mayim are kshirim. Menahan emulei. How do we know this is true? Dam rabbi yochanan mishum rabbi yosi barava makra. Ach mayan uvor mikveh mayim iye tahor. That's the pasuk that's found in Parshat Shmini, which tells us that a mikveh is mitaher items. And that is a mayan, a spring, bor, a cistern, mikveh mayim, any gathering of water, ashborn of water, iye tahor. That water is tahor, and only is it tahor, it can be mitaher. It can help you become tahor. The iye, the Gemara many times darshan's iye, is Havyatan ayidei tahara tehe. Yet tahor means it must be created through tahara. So not only does the mikveh provide tahara, not only does the mikveh itself tahor, it must be created through something that is tahor. You can't use any keli. You can't use your hands. You can't use your foot. You can't use anything that is an intermediary to get the water to the point where it's a mikveh mayim to be tahor with something that is tameh. Now even though here it's only speaking about a mikveh, we apply the same principle to the Mayim Chayim El Keli. You need Mayim Chayim. You can't generate the Mayim Chayim through an object of Tuma. It has to be created through an object of Tahara. And as Rashi explains over here, what is happening here is that you're deflecting the water. If you believe the deflection of the water brings it into Avir Kli, and the Avir Kli is not considered to be like the Kli, then there's no problem. You should not have an issue. For instance, if you went upriver, stuck your hand in the river, and the water's flowing by you, does that disqualify all the Mayim Chayim? Clearly not. That's not considered to be a disqualification of the Mayim Chayim just because you touched the water. Just because somebody stuck their foot in there, or deflected the water in any way, upriver or upflow, that's not going to matter. That's not an issue. It only has to be behavyatan tehi, which is in the creation of the water into the kli, the mayim chemel keli. If you use something of tumah to do that, that's problematic. But if you simply touch the water somewhere along the way, that's not a disqualification. So therefore, if you put your hand up and deflect the flow of water down into the chavit, if there is nothing between your hand and the kli, then your hand created the water that has been placed into the kli, and it was a hand that could be tameh, or davar ha-mekabel tumah, it's problematic. But that assumes that when you deflect the water and it goes into the kli, the airspace above the kli must be deemed to be like the kli. Because if the airspace above the kli is deemed to be like the kli, then as soon as you deflected it off your hand, it went directly into the kli. That means you generated the water or the mayim chayim into this kli, and that's a disqualified method for doing that. On the other hand, if you believe the airspace above the kli was not considered to be the kli, then all you're doing is like as if you're sticking a hand in the middle of the river, upriver. You're just sticking your hand here, the water moves, then it goes through the airspace, which is not the kli, and then it itself gets into the kli. So here, your hand is affecting the flow, but it's not affecting the flow directly into the chavit, because there's an intermediary stage between the time that you deflected it and the time it gets into the kli, where it's in airspace. And that already would make it that it's fine. So what this shows you is that avir kli, kli dummy. The airspace above the kli is like a kli, because otherwise this should not disqualify anything that you do. That's what the Mishnah shows you, and that's what we're going to say now. Amar Rabbi Chiya b'Avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, zot omeret. From this you would conclude, avir kli, kli dummy. The airspace above a kli must be like a kli. And the Pali Tosafot say, why didn't they bring this above? This is the best Mishnah. They should have brought this Mishnah before and proven from here that avir kli ke kli domi, because this Mishnah does give you exactly that information, as opposed to the before we were trying to figure out, is it or is it not like a kli domi, and we were trying to bring proofs from other Mishnayot or other scenarios. This would have been the simpler way to do it. So despite the fact that it is a good proof, they tried to bring other proofs above, but now we have a conclusive evidence that avir kli ke kli domi. And that has impact in our case over here, which is when you shecht the par, you need to get it over the avir kli. You need to get it in the airspace above the kli, so that way it goes directly from the par into the kli. Not literally in the kli, but at least into the airspace of the kli immediately. If there's airspace outside of the airspace of the kli, then you have a problem, because that's not going directly from the par to the kli, it's stopping, quote-unquote. It's passing through the avir airspace on the way to the avir kli, and that would be problematic. That's what we said before, the memo we had before, that the vridim have to be the tocha kli. Not literally in the kli, but in the airspace above the kli. So, Amar lei Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Chiya b'Avo. So then Rabbi Zera asked Rabbi Chiya b'Avo, v'dilma bishotet. How do you know that what you're saying is correct? Maybe it's a case here where it's dripping. It's not flowing with force, but rather it's dripping out. And that's why it's fine, because there's no airspace over here. Maybe the water is flowing directly from his hand into the utensil, meaning that shotate, it's dripping off his hand, it's going off his hand. Who says that it's going through the airspace above the kli beforehand? Maybe it's dripping off his hand into the kli, and it never went into the avir. Meaning, who says that there's any avir, a kli here? Your assumption is that there's some sort of airspace above the kli that the water is going through after it's deflected by his hand. Well, that'd be true if you're talking about water that's coming with force, and then he's deflecting it, so then when he deflects it, it goes into the airspace above the kli. But maybe the case is here where his hand is in the kli, or his hand is right on the kli, and therefore it's dripping off his hand directly into the kli, and then you can't prove anything. Can't prove that avir kli can kli dummy because there was no airspace there. How do you know that it's in an area that's above the kli, by which then you can prove avir kli can kli dummy? So he answers back to him very strongly. He says, Amalei Tardo. Says spinach head, which Rashi translates as being shote bahul, quick fool, fool that answers quickly. The Oruf says that it's shote morid rear, a fool or someone who is insane, who is salivating at the mouth and is dripping out of his mouth. And that, what are you saying? Kadeshi abru amayim lechavit tonight. The Mishnah says, in order to deflect the water into the chavit. You don't say that when it's shote. If all he's doing is just causing the water to be in the kli, here it says lahavir, to cause it to be deflected or move it towards the kli. That, by definition, is telling you that there's some airspace it's being deflected in the airspace of the kli. It's not going directly or dripping into the kli, because it says kedei lavir. Kedei lavir means a deflection of something with force. If he's mavir, that he is creating a deflection of the water, means it's coming with force, and it's not just dripping in, it's not just coming directly into the utensil, he's deflecting it through the air and directing it into the utensil. And therefore it clearly has to pass through the air or the avir of the kli. It's not just dripping off his hand into the kli or right on top of the kli. So Amar Rabbi Chia bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Meilutav shel Rabbi Tzadok Nishnat Mishnah Zo. The Mishnah that we brought before is a derivative of the testimony of Rabbi Tzadok. The Tanan, Heid Rabbi Tzadok ala zochalin shekilchan be'alei gozin shehein kshirim. That when you're talking about flowing waters, that he causes to flow through the leaves of the egozim, or deflects them with the leaves of the egozim, shein kisherin, that they are fine, which is exactly what we just said in our Mishnah before, that if you use something that is not mikabel tuma'a to deflect it, then that is kosher, because then it's havyato, the creation of whatever you need is done through tahara, with something that is tahor, will always remain tahor. This was an incident that took place in Olaya, and the question was brought all the way up to the Beit HaMikdash, Lishkat HaKazit, where the Sanhedrin HaGdolah sat, and they were machshirit. So that's what Rabbi Tzadok says. Rabbi Tzadok gives testimony to the fact that flowing water, live streaming water, which can be used for Mayim Chayim El Keli, if it is redirected by Aleya goes, then it is kasher water, which is what we saw in the Mishnah above. And then he had evidence from the fact that they had a question like this, and it was brought up to Lishkat HaGazit, and they said it was kasher. So Rabbi Tzadok's testimony is the background for why the Mishnah before made the distinction between things that are tameh and things that are tor. I'm Rabbi Zera, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Hatzoreim ozen apar, v'achar kach kibel damo pasul. Another topic, another issue. But it's connected to what we said before because of the limud midama par. You did a shechita of the par in the mikdash, and then after you shechted it already, you cut the ear of the par. So Rashi says that you made a mum in the par afterwards. You made it into a bal mum after it already was shechted. Is there a problem of the par being a bal mum after it's shechted? Before shechita, it's clearly a problem. If the animal is a bal mum, it's disqualified from being a korban, and the shechita wouldn't do anything for that. It's not a kosher korban. The thing here is that it was kosher, and it didn't have a bal mum. It didn't have any mum in it, no blemish in it, when you shechted it. After you already shechted it, you put a mum in it. Does that have any bearing on the situation? So the question is why? That we'll see in 1 second, why should it have any bearing on the situation. The Rashi claims it was a mum. Others say that the mum shouldn't make a difference, because shechita is the biggest mum that you can make in the animal. So why should it matter that you cut the ear of the animal? Rather, they say that, like, they cut off the ear of the animal, that the animal is now chaser. Is there some relevance to the fact that it's chaser after you did the shechita? Rabbi Yezer says in him, Rabbi Yochanan, the kabbalat adam that is done after this, either blemish is put in the ear or the ear is cut off, is problematic. Shenemar. Lekach midam hapar. You have to take from the dam hapar. It's the same puzzle we've been darshing all along. Par shaya kivar. That the kicha, which is the kabbalat adam, must be done from the Dama Par, but the Par is the Par that pre-existed. The same Par that was there before has got to be the Par that's there now. Meaning, the Par Bishle Muto, the Par like it was before the Shkita, has to be the same Par afterwards. So just like before the Shkita it had no mum in it, so too, after the Shkita it can't have a mum in it. Or the other way you could formulate it, just like before the Shkita it was whole, so too after the Shkita it was whole. So that's the two ways to formulate it. Now, the question of shechita being the greatest mum, or severing of the head, so either you have to say that it's still not considered to be chaser, because they're makriv, the head and the animal on the mizbeach, so everything is there, and you're capturing everything that's there, it just happens to be severed. Once you take off the ear, it's missing something that's problematic. Or, like Rashi's explanation, where you say it's a mum, and the mum is problematic, and why is it shechita a bigger mum than that? The shechita is part of the processing of the animal. And so that's not considered to be a mum. That's what you're supposed to be doing. Cutting the ear off is not what you're supposed to be doing. Or putting a mum into the ear is not what you're supposed to be doing. And therefore, that might be disqualifying in nature. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan says. The pasuk says, "Lekach midam hapar." Hapar means the par. Hey Yidia, the par that existed before this point in time. It's not generic dam par. It's not dam of the par. It's dam ha par. Dam of the par that you shechted, that same par has got to be the one that you mekabel the dam from. It must be whole at that point in time. Ashkechan kodshe kodoshim. This pasuk is found by the par kohen Mashiach. That's mean by kodshe kodoshim. You see, that's the rule there. Kodshim kalim minolon. How do we know that that requirement also exists by kodshim kalim? Amarova, Tanya, we have a brayta that tells us that, which is setamim zachar ben shana. That with regards to the korban of Pesach, it has to be a setamim, flock animal, whether it is a goat or a sheep, that is whole, without blemish in it. Ben zachar, it has to be a male, and ben shana, it must be 1 year old. Shei tamim uben shana b'shat shechita. It has to be a tamim and a ben shana at the time of shechita. Even though the pasuk doesn't say anything about shechita, Rashi says that the juxtaposition in the pasuk of the word tachosu, which we've noted before, according to Chazal, means to shecht. So then the juxtaposition of the word tachosu to the requirements over here make it that the shechita has to have these qualifications. The animal at the time of the shechita has to be tamim, without a blemish. It has to be a zachar, it has to be a male. And it has to be ben shana, it has to be 1 year old. And then the pasuk immediately afterwards is setamim zakar ben shana iyelachem mina kasvim mina izim tikachu. So you see that the juxtaposition of tachosu from the previous pasuk and the setamim zakar ben shana teach you that those dinim apply to shechita. Bikabala beolacha bezvika minayim. How do you know that these same dinim apply to all the other avodot? Tamalomar, iye. The word iye appears there. It says, setamim zachar ben shana, iye lachem. Kol habiotav, lo yu ela tam uben shana. All of its existence, all of its processing must be done when it is a tam, when it's not a bamum, ben shana, when it is 1 year old. Now, Haviotav means anything that is demanded in the processing of it, which would be all the avodot. Shechita, Kabbalah, Holacha, and Zrika. The Tseh must remain a Tamim and a Ben Shana during all that period of time. So now we have a proof about Kodshim Kalim, because Pesach is Kodshim Kalim. And by Kodshim Kalim, we also have this requirement that it be whole even during the process of Kabbalat Adam, not just at the time of Shechita, but even afterwards. It has to be Tamim all the way through the processing of the animal. The Bali does what I'm saying over here, say Vitema. Lael got me Midama Par below Midama Or. What about all the Limudim before that we had Midama Par? This is one of the Limudim for Midama Par. This Limud is that it has to be from the par that is still whole that you do the Kabbalat Adam. But we had two other Limudim before. We had Midama Par, Midama Nefesh, below Midama Tamsit, Midama Or. We also had Dam Mea Par. It has to be directly from the par. All of those are learnt out of a case of Kochei Kodashim. Why doesn't the Gemara say, where's your source for Kochim Kalim? Why only in this case did they ask about it? So the Balatav would answer, V'yesh Lamar, the came in the Goli Hocha, who had din Hotam. That once we already indicate that one of those Didim that applies to that Limud in the Pasuk, not only applies to Kochim Kodashim, also applies to Kochim Kalim, that is basically revealing the fact that there's no distinction. The distinction you thought maybe to make between Kochim Kodashim and Kochim Kalim, it doesn't exist. Because one of the Didim that you have here by Kochim Kodashim is exactly alike. When it comes to Kochim Kalim, that means that basically all these dinim that you learn at that pasuk, Kochei Kodashim and Kochim Kalim, will be identical and there'll be no difference between them. So now the Gemara says, Eitvei Abaye, Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Kol Hazvachim Shebetorah, Shenishtareh Mehem Kezayit Basar, Kezayit Chelev, Zareikat Adam. That any korban that has at least a kezayit of flesh left, or a kezayit of the fats left, then you could do Zareikat Hadam. So there's no necessity to have the whole animal left when you're doing the Zrikat Adam. You can have a little piece of the animal and it would be fine. It'd be kosher. So how can you say over here that you need the animal to be intact at the time of the Zrikat Adam? Well, you have Rabbi Yeshua saying that you need just a small portion of the animal that is left. Now, the question is really on Rava, not on Rabbi Zeira. And that's what Rashi points out. About the Rabbi Zeira Lokasha, Rabbi Zeira that brought the memory from Yochanan, that's not a question. If you noted, there was a slight difference between the Limudim. The Limud by Rabbi Zeira and Rabbi Yochanan by Kochim Kodashim was only about Shechita, and then Lakach Midam Apar.
The Kabbalat Adam has to be done when it's still whole. He made no requirements by Holacha or Zrika that it still had to be whole then, just for Shkita and Kabbalah. Rava comes along to answer the question, how do we know Kodshim Kalim? Oh, we know that out of Pesach. Well, Pesach, he said, not only is it by Shkita, it's also by Kabbalah, Holacha, and Zrika, you have that din. This is a bias challenge to Rava's statement. How can you say that you require it by Zrikat Adam when we have Rabbi Yeshua Tana who says that you only need a Kazayit Basar or Kazayit Chelev to do Zrikat Adam. You don't need the whole animal to do Zrikat Adam. So that can't be what the limud is. So Targuma a Ben Shana. You have to explain it referencing to the Ben Shana. So that drasha by the Korban of Pesach where it says that it must remain the same from the time of Shkita all the way through the other Avodot. That's because the pasuk says Tachoso that you will shecht it, and in the process of shechting it, the subsequent pasuk says that it has to be Setamim Zachar Ben Shana Yelachem. So that it must remain in that way. So it actually works out well because it says Zachar Ben Shana Yeh. The juxtaposition between the Yeh and the Ben Shana tells you that that's the one factor that must be true throughout the processing of the animal. It means Shkita, Kabbalah, Holacha, Zrika, all have to be done when the animal is Ben Shana. As far as Tamim is concerned, then that's true by Shkita, that's also true by Kabbalah. How do we know that now? You just took away the limud over here. So Rashi says over here, the Kabbalah, because the Shim Kalim, bit bimut, hoil begoli, because she kodeshim goli. So Rashi says in the end, once the Torah taught you that it was true by Kodeshim Kodeshim, it's also true by Kodeshim Kalim. So that's something unique to Kodeshim Kodeshim, and you don't need a separate limud. That would take away the whole question of Tosafot, because now we wouldn't need any source for Kodeshim Kalim, because here the Gemara is willing to learn in the end from Kodeshim Kodeshim, but just say, it's a revelation that this is the case, that Shkita, Kabbalah has to be done in the same state as Shkita, just like by Kodeshim Kodeshim, so do by Kodeshim Kalim. Kodeshim Kalim have the same requirement of no mum. They have no dispensation. There's nothing less in terms of the halachot of Kodeshim Kalim from Kodeshim Kodeshim with regards to this part of the processing of the animal. So therefore, just like by Kodeshim Kodeshim, it's true over here. But what he does teach you is something that's incredible over here and somewhat difficult. Now you require that it be a Ben Shana from the time that you begin the process, Shkita, all the way to the end of the process of Zrika. Well, wait a minute. You're doing this for the Korban of Pesach on the afternoon of the 14th. How does an animal change age in the middle of the process? If he's 1 year old, he's 1 year old today. If he's not 1 year old today, he's not 1 year old today. How do you have it change in the middle of the process? Amarava zoto merit. From that you would conclude, sha'ot poslot v'kodeshim. The hours are important for determining the age of something that is kodesh. That means that when you count the age of something that is kodeshim, you don't just count the day he's born. And then he's 1 year until the day before he was born the following year. That's not his first year of life. His first year of life is what we call me'eit la'eit. From the moment he's born to the moment you come back to that moment he was born, that is considered to be the year of life. That means that in the middle of the day, if he was born 3 o'clock in the afternoon, then after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he's already 2 years old. Because that's the cutoff time for it. Hours will matter in terms of his completing the year. So what you see from here, and this is what Rashi points out, it's based on the Gemara in Nida, that the Gemara in Nida lists certain things that their year is not determined by Me'et La'et, time from moment to moment, and other things that they are determined by Me'et La'et. Rashi contrasts a situation in which Rosh Hashanah is the new year, versus Me'et La'et, where the day itself is the contrast. It's very interesting because it's Rashi the Shitato. We get to Nida, I'll show you this. Rashi on Chumash does the same thing. Where he says that a person's age changes over at Rosh Hashanah. Why does a person's age change over at Rosh Hashanah? Your age changes over when you get back to your birthday. That's the new year when you're at your birthday. But Rashi contrasts over here is the Gemara says either it's Sha'ot, which means that it's based on the exact moment you were born, back to that moment you're born, and that's the determination of age, and that's what we're saying here by Kodeshim. Or the alternative is Rosh Hashanah. That when you cross over Rosh Hashanah, that would be the new year. Since you're in a new year, that's already your second year of life. So if you're born before Rosh Hashanah, after Rosh Hashanah is already the second year. We have precedents for that. For instance, when you're dealing with Orla, if you plan something a month before Rosh Hashanah, by the time it gets to Rosh Hashanah, it's already the second year of Orla for this tree. So we do have precedents for that. Now the king's reign also is determined by Rosh Hashanah. Crossover Rosh Hashanah, even he had a stub year before, afterwards it's the second year of his reign. Rashi says the same thing with regards to age over here. He says, the ain monin la mi tishrei, kashar rosh hashanim. You don't count the age of the animal from rosh hashanah. El mi yom shnolad mi eight la eight, l'shana ba. You go to the exact moment of time it was born in the subsequent year. V'yaflinen lai mikra, and we learn it out from the pasuk that ben shnato. So that means shnato shelo. Ben shnato means shana shelo, his year, his personal year, not the year of shelo olam, the minyan shelo olam. And again, you could have contrasted, not like Rashi, and said that the difference is whether you count the birthday from the day to day or made late. So for instance, a bar mitzvah boy. A bar mitzvah boy, when he's born on a certain date, we assume that when he reaches 13 years and one day, which means his birthday on his 13th year, because you count the years the day before your birthday, you've completed 13 years. That means the next day, he is now a ben shlosh esrei ve'yom echad. He's already classified. Do we look at what hour he was born on his birthday? If you did that, you'd have to wait on the 13th year and the first day. You'd have to wait until that hour when he was born. We don't say that. We just go by days, not by hours. So that could have been the contrast that Rashi drew, which is either you count days, and the birthday is determined by the day he was born. We don't look at the time during the day that he's born. Or you look at the hours. So Rashi says that's not the contrast. The contrast would have been either hours or Rosh Hashanah. And Rashi does this in a number of places, where he says that age is determined by crossing over Rosh Hashanah. He mentions it by the census that's taken in the Midbar. How is it possible that they took a census in Shmot, and then they take a census in Bamidbar, and they get the exact same number? Why is there the same number? People have to change ages over that period of time. Rashi says they didn't cross over Rosh Hashanah. They didn't cross over Rosh Hashanah. What does that have to do with anything? It has to do whether you crossed your birthday. It doesn't have to do with crossing Rosh Hashanah. There, Rashi in the Shitato says Rosh Hashanah determines your age. You cross over Rosh Hashanah, that's New Year, and not based on when your birthday is. So Rashi, in numerous places, I can show that when we get to Nido, has that concept, and he mentions it here as well, that the age of the animal would have been either by Rosh Hashanah or by hours. Again, I would have said the difference would have been between hours and days. And that way, as long as it was born Erev Pesach, it would be disqualified in the following year, because by the time you got to Erev Pesach, it was already over a year. This makes it actually a kula, that if it's born on Erev Pesach, you have to look at what hour it was born on Erev Pesach. It's born very late in the day on Erev Pesach, it'd still be kasher the next year, as long as you've got everything in, all the four avodot in, before it crossed over that hour, when it would change over to being 2 years old from 1 year old. All right, we're going to stop here on the last line of Chof Hei Amud Bet.